Hey, what's going on? This is Jeremy Thome, Marketing Director of 3PL Systems and host of 3PL Live. I'm excited to interview my friend Russell Jones, CEO and co-founder over at Cargo Chief. In this episode, we talk about his whole entrepreneurial journey from starting a company called ClearVox Communication, where they sold headsets and got early investing Series A in the early 90s. And then learning about the issues of shipping through that company, just the fact that finding capacity was hard. So then they started a brokerage and then built tech in order to find capacity, including some DFM solutions. And then basically a lot of people were asking for their software. So that's how Cargo Chief came about. Really fascinating story. Talks about managing up to board members, patents, all sorts of stuff. Hope you enjoy this episode. Hey Russ, thanks for coming on to 3PL Live. I am excited to speak with you. I know you're a serial entrepreneur in the freight industry, but you've also worked in other industries, mainly technology. But for those that don't know you, would you just mind introducing yourself and your company?
Sure. My name is Russ Jones. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Cargo Chief. We help freight brokers buy full truckload capacity more effectively, more efficiently.
Before we get into your story, just wanted to chat with you just about like just news in general. It's crazy times with like Convoy going under. And did you see that coming? I had no idea that that was going to happen. And then the yellow thing this year, it's been a crazy year.
It's been crazy. I think you're seeing the less demand as people have bought everything they need from the pandemic. Pandemic's over. So now they're starting to take travel and buy services. So the need for stuff has gone down. That's combined with an overexpansion of a couple of years ago during the pandemic. So the combination of those things have rates way down, and that's hurting 3PLs and inefficient carriers. Yellow was hampered with a lot of debt that most carriers don't have, had challenges with their union, and perhaps was mismanaged.
So tell me a little bit about your college experience. You're very heavily educated with some really Ivy League degrees. You went to Harvard, also Boston University. You grew up where in the Midwest? Tell me a little bit about your education.
Thank you. I grew up in a small town in Wisconsin and wanted to see what it was like to live in a big city with lots going on.
Fun.
Boston University was perfect. I went there. I focused in on industrial marketing, or really B2B marketing. Mm-hmm. And I also took a minor in computers and learned a dozen programming languages.
Mm. What about, what was your first experience with like business and raising capital? I looked on your LinkedIn page and it looked like you raised capital at ClearVox in like the early mid 90s, was it?
Yes, it was our first. I got socially connected to the Band of Angels, which is a famous angel group here in Silicon Valley. We became a Band of Angels company. The company was ClearVox Communications. We pioneered the market for headsets for mobile phones, and really kind of a neat startup story. At the time, all three of the founders had young children, and I take a call with my sister every weekend for about an hour. I wanted to be able to feed my son, hold the bottle, hold my son, and hold the phone, and that was really challenging. So I had the idea that, well, stockbrokers and use headsets all the time with their desk phone. Why don't we make a product so you could use your cordless phone or your cellular phone with a headset? And we were in the right place at the right time. Eventually, there became hands-free driving laws and made it a legal requirement to have a headset or some other hands-free device. Then also in 89, there was a lot of information about the cellular transmitter being bad next to your brain. All that grew our business rapidly. We became the category winner, shipping millions of units.
Wow. How hard was it? I'm sure it was really hard, but how hard was it to get that first product out? And how did you just high level go about doing that?
We talked with a lot of people about what they would want. Well, one of my co-founders, Alex, was an engineer, and we sat down and agreed on what it was to be built. We would build it and then give it to people as prototypes and ask them to check it out over the weekend and give us feedback. And we did that for a few months and then got it right. The product started to sell very quickly.
And I know that you also have 10 patents. Could you talk a little bit about patents? And I think patents are very interesting, but I don't know a whole ton about it. But what's like the advantage of having a patent? Obviously, you have some sort of technology that you could, I guess, have like an advantage of for a certain period of time. Or how does it work and why do you pursue them?
The how it works is you come up with an idea. As a layperson, you can go to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and try to search patents, but that's pretty hard, very arcane and very difficult language to follow. So I think you find a patent attorney, and they'll do a search for maybe $3,000 or $4,000. come back and give you a sense for whether your idea is likely to be patentable or unlikely to be patentable. If it's likely, then probably for around another $10,000 to $15,000, you can file the patent, and then hopefully it becomes granted. And it's kind of like, think of it as a map. If you're going for the whole state of the, or the whole country of the United States, you're unlikely to get it. But if you go for just a little portion, you're very likely. So there's a balance between how broad your claims are and how many claims you have versus the likelihood of getting the patent.
Mm. I don't know a whole lot of people that have raised money. I know that quite a few people obviously in the market have raised money, but what is it like to like raise money from VCs for the first time? And I know you've done it several times and also a cargo chief. So what is that experience like?
How I see it is that if you buy a product from Best Buy, you can return it. If you get a service from Comcast, you can discontinue it. But when you're selling equity in a startup, the investor hopes that this equity is worth something or worth more in 5 to 10 years. It's super hard. So kind of high level numbers that people have talked about and I've experienced are maybe when you approach an investor, maybe 1 in 10 approaches will result in a meeting. And then you get your meeting. The kind of high level numbers is 1 in 10 meetings will result in an investment. So if you will, you have a 100-to-1 shot, and it has to be awesome work. You know, when I coach other entrepreneurs and I help them, they think that their investment deck is done. I tell them, when you've gotten your first version done and you spent 50, 60, 100 hours on it, and you think it's amazing, probably at a B-. And as you start to expose this presentation and your style to investors and getting feedback, you'll start tweaking the deck. And maybe after 10 to 15 generations of that deck, it becomes an A or an A+. It's super hard. It's highly competitive.
Mm, it sounds hard. What about just also offline? We kind of talked a little bit about like giving bad news to the board or giving good news to the board and potentially like sandwiching a couple good things with a couple bad things and like managing up. How do you view that as well?
Well, I think it's very important to work closely with your board. I think it's a mistake. Board meetings, there should never be a surprise. So what savvy entrepreneurs or CEOs do is that they contact each board member beforehand. Hey, Ben, this is what's happening. Here's what's going on. Here's the challenge. Here's what we see. Here are the alternatives that we considered, and we're selecting this. We recommend this course of this path of action, and this is why. Savvy investors and savvy board members know that there are going to be a lot of challenges, unforeseen challenges, and they're really betting on the team. Is this a team that is smart enough to overcome challenges, determined enough to stay in the game when it's getting tough? That's really what the bet is.
What about just dealing with, like, I can imagine that board members and executives at your level are not the easiest people to deal with just because they're very smart and very analytical and things of that nature. So like dealing with like difficult people, have you learned any like tools or tricks over the years to, I guess, deal with these types of people? Just because it seems like it would be very hard or emotional to some level.
Well, first, as an entrepreneur, you want a board that's very disciplined. This is an opportunity for you to get really tough feedback. This is you standing naked in front of the mirror feedback. You want that feedback. You want the board. So how to work best with the board, and what I practice, and I've hosted probably a couple hundred board meetings, is to first send out the packet a day and a half in advance. So I like board meetings on Wednesday afternoon. So I send the whole packet on Monday night. So they get the financials, the forecast, an outline of what we're going to talk about, and the minutes from the previous board meeting. So no one ever has an excuse, so I didn't know what was going on. So they get a chance to prep and they feel like they're well prepared. And secondly, from working with the board, to learn what information they want in what format and provide it that way. Make it easy for them to understand what's going on so you can leverage their experience and their advice to give everyone a better chance of being successful.
When you were more green, I guess, before you had hosted so many meetings, were you nervous at first? It seems like it'd be very stressful to be in those situations when you're green.
Oh, I remember my first few board meetings, my co-founders and I at the headset business, we were unfit to work after the board meeting. It was like a total thrashing. But you are determined, you're excited about your venture, you see where it's going, and you continue on with determination to prove not only to yourself, but also to the board members that you can overcome what they've told you and make it right and make it go.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about Cargo Chief. How did that idea come up? It seemed like you guys had started a brokerage and then people wanted the technology that you built for the brokerage, if I understood you correctly. Could you explain that story?
Jeremy, yes, that's right. It's actually kind of a neat story. From my headset business, we were shipping millions of units. I had a lot of issues with trucking. I remember very specifically a call with the buyer at Best Buy. We were in, 900 locations, had 26 pegs. The business was on fire. We're shipping 50 or 60, 80,000 units a month. The buyer said, "Hey, Russ, the new Nokia SKU is doing great. I've just emptied the warehouses. They're going to be in the stores. Probably sell out of our current inventory by Friday. Where is the truck? I need to know. Else I'm going to have to give some of your pegs away to your direct competitors because I can't have empty pegs on the weekend." Very reasonable thing for the buyers, say at Best Buy. I couldn't tell them where the truck was. You can imagine the frustration with that. I had other situation where I had a 50,000 unit order going to Motorola, and you can't be late for Motorola. They're really a tight ship. I went to my usual sources for capacity, and they said, "I'm sorry, Russ, we don't have a truck." I'm like, "I don't care what the price is. You know, shipping cost of shipping a headset's not very much." So I said, "I'm willing to pay 2 or 3x the normal price to get a truck." And they're saying, "Sorry, can't help you." I was like, "That's ridiculous."
Jeez.
So I started up Cargo Chief to help small shippers. What we learned is that the big shippers have the same careabouts. Cargo Chief, the brokerage, grew very quickly. Within a few years, tens of millions of dollars of business. In 2017, other brokers started saying, "Hey, Cargo Chief, your multi-patented award-winning tech is better than anything else I can find. Would you please license it?" When I heard that for the sixth time, it made me think of a distant relative that came to the California Gold Rush, not to be a gold miner, but to sell pickaxes and shovels to gold miners. So I said, "Well, what would happen if we leveraged our technology across a bunch of brokerages? We develop this huge infrastructure, incredible database, and we'd have some really neat technology that would level the playing field for small SMB brokers against the mega brokers." And we thought that was a much better business than trying to compete with tens of thousands of other freight brokers. So we sold the brokerage and started a new company that was basically selling data and technology to brokers. And now today we have over 1,500 buyers on our system, approaching $10 billion worth of freight spend among them.
Oh, wow. So tell me a little bit about, like, high level too, like some of the components of the product. Is the product mainly to help capacity, to help these shippers find trucks more efficiently and reuse carriers and things of that nature? And then also some pricing engines as well?
Sure. So the very first part of Cargo Chief, and our goal is to help SMB freight brokers. We get a few freight forwarder clients, but most of our clients are freight brokers. And initially it was to help get capacity, help them figure out the problem. There are literally a million trucking companies in the United States. Which is the right one to go from Phoenix to Kansas City on a Tuesday? Oh, that's really hard to puzzle. I don't know, right? So how do you solve that? So we started getting more and more data, and we've gotten a number of different ways to get that data in, including surmising data from payment processors and factorers, auto-reading capacity emails. Sometimes a carrier will send out an email saying, "Hey, truck 47's in Oakland, wants to go to Dallas tomorrow, and we got a load for me." So our algorithms have learned hundreds of formats. On top of that, the next thing we add was price. So our pricing engine. So our customers are dissatisfied with the available pricing engines. So we introduced the industry's first real-time pricing engine. Clients tell us our pricing engine is the most accurate that they're aware of. And then leveraging our database, and we feel that the database about carrier preferences is so great that we know better than anybody else which carriers want to go between what cities and what days and how often. We introduced digital freight matching. What makes our digital freight matching outperform alternatives by a factor of 3 is that when we get a load offer, we only present that load to carriers that are set up with the client, carriers that want that lane, and carriers that want that lane on the day that it's going to be picked up. So if I'm the carrier, I'm Tommy 10 Truck, I'll get an email from ABC Brokerage. I'm going to go, "Oh my gosh, well, ABC Brokerage, I'm set up with them. I know who they are. They pay their bills. And I'm looking for, say, Atlanta to Miami on a Monday. wow, this is really relevant to me. I am statistically 3 times more likely to engage and do something than the spray and pray approach, which alienates carriers and wastes everyone's time. Mm. So our digital freight matching business is rapidly growing, order magnitude, 100% quarter over quarter growth, working with great partners like 3PL Systems and their Brookware offering, which is a modern TMS where integration was practical. And now we've integrated once and all the clients of 3PL Systems now has access to these tools that enable a midsize or small broker to have the same capabilities and same data set as the multi-billion dollar mega brokers.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. It seems interesting too, because it seems like the old way of doing things of just hanging out like on a load board is it's very risky in my eyes. Like it seems very dangerous to sort of not have like a strategy or just always use the load boards for booking freight. Is that part of it too? Because you'd mentioned that with the DFM that you guys are, it's already carriers that the brokers use. So it just seems smarter to me to use like trusted resources. Is that part of the solution as well?
That's exactly right, Jeremy. You're spot on. Our view is that why would a broker who spent all this time and effort to close a great customer, let's pretend Kimberly Clark, and then they would risk this important customer on a load board carrier who they have no relationship with, don't know if they're a good guy or a horrible guy. Every broker who's been in business for any period of time has a war story about how they hired a load board carrier and the carrier totally took them for a ride, took advantage of the situation, held their customer's freight hostage. You can lose a shipper over, you know, the misgivings of a bad carrier. So our view is go work with your existing carriers. Part of our system also does is our system C4 is we help people focus in on repetitive freight and how to do a great job. Our view is that if you do a load once a year from Bismarck to Provo, it doesn't matter if you're making money on that because you're doing it once a year. What really matters is how are you doing when you buy Atlanta to Miami 30 times a month? If you do a great job on that, you'll make your money and more. So we just released a week ago, a brand new functionality called Advanced Waterfalling, where the client can say for a specific lane, say Atlanta to Miami, these three carriers get it first at a low price, then wait 5 minutes, and then go to the next set of carriers at a slightly higher price, and then third batch of carriers at a normal market price. And this helps the broker to get high quality service and an aggressive cost point to improve margins.
That's smart. Is that waterfalling thing, is that done through email? Is that
how the carriers are doing business today is via email. We're starting to integrate with the carrier TMSs. So for some, you know, and we'll do more and more of this in 2024 of getting out to the carriers and, you know, presenting the load not only via email, but into the TMS. We also announced a functionality when the carrier replies and says, I'll haul that for 2,000. We're able to auto-read that capacity, that carrier reply, and put that data into the TMS like 3PL Systems.
Mm. It's interesting. Do you see like the government ever changing the amount of like MCs that are sent out every year? Because it just seems like a lot of them just go out of business. It just seems like that process might be slightly broken. And I know that's kind of a big question, but just your overall just thoughts on that.
My view is brokerage is like other service industries where it is very much low barriers to entry, like an ad agency or an accountancy. So I think you always have a flux of new brokers coming into the field. Technologies like 3PL Systems and CargoChief that enable savvy people without having tons of resources to come up to speed and have a very compelling business very quickly help those emerging brokers have the same advantages as those that have been in business for decades.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the DFM story too, because I think the digital freight matching is pretty fascinating. How did that idea come up for you guys to build that, and like how did it work like on a high level? How did you accomplish that?
So when we were responding to complaints from our clients saying that they couldn't, you know, they had many carriers, maybe 4,000 or 5,000 carriers, but they didn't know which were the right one or how to reach them effectively. They knew that they had 20 carriers, say, for Atlanta to Miami, but how do I efficiently and effectively communicate out to them? So they saw that with the digital freight matching, enabled everyone on the team to efficiently go out and go after every lane and save time.
Interesting stuff. Yeah. And then how do you guys like figure, I'm assuming that just talking to your customers and really staying in the loop with them is kind of how you kind of stay up with like what's going on in the market, maybe reading like some news on freightways or transport topics or going to TIA. Like what are some other ways you kind of stay up to date with like emerging tech?
I appreciate bringing that up. One of the things that we have a phenomenal CTO. Kirk is a phenomenal CTO. One of the things his disciplines is every other Friday, he'll meet and make time, stop the world, make time to meet with our customer success team and say, hey, what are the features people are asking for? And then we deliver those features and we turn the, you know, we had come out with a new version of C4 probably every month. The additional ways is reading all the newsletters that come in. This industry's got a lot. I probably get a dozen newsletters every morning. It takes a lot to consume all that. And then going to the events, the TIA events are very strong. I like those. You can learn also from the Freight Waves events. I think those in between that and the newsletters and listening to your customers, I think it's a very good way to keep abreast of what's going on.
Totally. That makes sense. And you guys go to quite a few shows, right? Throughout the year, you go to like TIA, you're going to be at F3, right?
Going to be at F3. I've probably go to maybe 10 events a year. I've gone to the McKinsey Future of Freight or Future of Logistics, the Freight Wave shows. There's one in the summer, one coming up next week in Chattanooga. Both TIA events are excellent. Also, some of the investment banks like Stifel have very good events where you can go and kind of see what's going on and hear what people are having to say. So there's a whole source of events. And I think you have to be careful not to go to too many of them, right? Like the ATA events are cool, but I'm not sure it's as practical for us. And so you have to really be thoughtful about which events you go to. We're very keen on partner marketing. We find that's got the best marketing ROI. So we totally, you know, welcome the opportunity to participate, for example, at the 3PL Systems user conference that they had in Manhattan Beach. A very good conference, excellent content, great connections with common customers.
We appreciate that. Yeah, and we're glad that you guys made it out to that. We enjoyed you guys being there. Talk to me a little bit too about like VCs that you'd mentioned too when you were raising money for Cargo Chief that they wanted like a CTO. Is that common for I guess technologists or VCs wanting kind of super techie people involved in the founding team?
Yeah, that was actually our pre-seed round, our very first round for Cargo Chief was led by an AI VC called Bootstrap Labs, who likes to invest in the very earliest rounds. And they generated actually a term sheet to me, here's some money, and he'll be more money once you've identified and signed on a CTO that's acceptable to us. And so I think savvy investors of tech companies, most of our headcount is tech, want a great CTO that not only knows how to manage a team, but also knows how to, if you will, be responsive to the ebbs and flows of customers and direction of the company.
Mm. How did you end up hooking up with Kirk? Did you know him before or how did that all happen?
We didn't. We were introduced to Kirk through a recruiter. What I thought made a lot of sense was to have the CTO candidates actually build a website. So we made a kind of a mini version of C4 and said, you have 4 hours to go make a website.
No pressure.
So Kirk was able to make that happen and did the best job. We're very fortunate to have.
Well, that's really, yeah, I met him at our event. He's a really good guy. Do you have any advice for like entrepreneurs starting out? You have a lot of like great experience. So I'm just curious, like people that are not necessarily even wanting to like raise money, but just like small business in general, like do you have any tips or anything? Like what would you recommend to your earlier self maybe?
Sure. So I think one of the things is that when someone's starting up a company, most of the time, especially in the world of technology, you're doing something new and different that no one has ever done before in the history of mankind. This is going to be hard. There are going to be surprises. There are going to be some good surprises. There are going to be some bad surprises. So things are going to take longer and cost more. The Wall Street Journal did a study of I think maybe 1,000 startups. 99% of them were late compared to what they thought they were going to do. Being late and being surprised is par for the course. Not planning for it is not okay. Whatever you think it will take you, planned, it will take you more time and more cost. So raise more capital than you think. Savvy entrepreneurs eat when they're served and work well with your investors. Keep them involved. Most of my investors are repeat investors. I'm very proud of that. And it's because I communicate well with my investors and work with them. They're never surprised. They know what's going on and they feel like they're kind of part of the company, not just an arm's length distance away.
I like that. The communication seems huge. Just being able to like communicate good news, bad news. That seems pretty big. What about any books? Do you have any books that you've, I really like this book called Influence by Robert Cialdini. It's all about like kind of business psychology. Like one principle in there is like the law of reciprocation. So when you do something nice for someone, usually they do something nice back. And they also have social proof. Do you have any favorite books in marketing or business in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a ton of business books. I love business books. That's why I read it on vacation usually. So I have a high level book that I think is really neat. It's all about crossing the chasm at a very high level. I like when you're working in emerging techs and transitioning that emerging technology into the mainstream. That's really where you can make a lot of money. You know, someone says, hey, I want to go work on a flying car startup. Well, that could be really big in 30 years, but probably won't be big in the next 5 or 10 because it's too far out there. And if someone says, I want to start a restaurant. Well, there's, you know, a million restaurants. So that's not that interesting. So what are you working on where you're taking some recently available technology and you're going to combine it together to generate? And this is very important. When you're starting a business, you won't be able to answer these series of questions. Who is going to do what, where, why, and how come? And that's the key. Well, do you have a business? Does it make sense? Who's the customer? What are they doing? Where, how are they going to do it? And why? So I like the book Crossing the Chasm. There's a number of great business books. This is one of many. I think it's great to think about early adopters. And I think as the company grows, one of the challenges for an entrepreneur and CEO value is, do you have the right people on the bus at the right time in the right seats? And that's important. And that those needs change over time. And it's important for the CEO to be thinking about that and to go off for a weekend. Don't do any email. Give yourself a break and get, 10 hours of sleep. Be well rested and think about strategic issues.
I got one last question for you, just out of curiosity, being a CEO and having some pretty interesting experiences, like how do you deal with stress? Because like it seems like being a CEO has a lot of pressure, especially like in emerging tech and things of like the future like that. So do you like work out or like how do you deal with like stress and how do you keep a healthy mindset?
Some people are just built differently than others. I love to run hard. I get 6 hours of sleep, no coffee, and I'm on for 18 hours a day. I don't work 18 hours a day, but I'm doing something 18 hours a day. I work out Tuesdays and Fridays in a gym. On Sundays, I play soccer year-round. There's a whole variety of things for people to go do. I think being physically active is important. There's also hobbies and pursuits. You know, when I had young children, spending time with them, total quality time, not trying to watch TV or trying to do email while I'm hanging out with my kids, but focus in on that activity to give your brain a break from the work or from your startup. So when you come back, you're refreshed. You might have a brilliant idea, you jot it down and then come back to it. You want to give yourself your brain a break. I like intense skiing. If you're skiing really fast, 40, 50 miles an hour, you have to be thinking about skiing. You're not thinking about anything else, otherwise you're going to get hurt badly. That's a great way to have a really clear mind when you're done.
Yeah, I know that we had chatted about a little bit about your kids too, and you mentioned that one of your kids had a pretty high standardized test scores.
Yes, my son is a great test taker. He's studying to get I'm proud to say a PhD in machine learning.
Dang.
At Brown. So he hopes to be a professor. We'll see if that happens. The bar is pretty high. He's pursuing what he wants to do, and we're very fortunate that he has that flexibility to do that.
Wow. Fascinating, Russ. All super fascinating stuff you got going on over there. But I really appreciate your time. Where do I send people if they want to grab a demo of Cargo Chief?
Please, either come to our website, www.cargochief.com, all run together, or please reach out to me directly, rjones@cargochief.com. Thank you, Jeremy, for this opportunity. Appreciate it.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for the time, Russ. Thanks for sticking around to the end of that episode with Russell Jones, CEO and co-founder over at Cargo Chief. Very down-to-earth guy for the amount of success that he's had, really willing to share his internal processes, his thoughts on how he became successful. I think that managing up to the board of directors is super interesting because I think that a lot of people try to hide bad information. So I learned a lot in that episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a great weekend. Be safe. And we'll catch you on the next one.